And this evening we're in the 10th chapter where we're going to begin. We purposely left this on the board. I need to make a correction before we go into the 10th chapter. When we talked about the Roman Empire, you saw how it came down into the legs of iron and into feet, partly of iron and partly of clay. And I was telling you how the Roman Empire was divided into two sections, the East and the West, and how that they had equal rule at one time. And I called them proconsuls, but dropped the pro. It's consuls. When you get down to the provinces, the people over the provinces were called proconsuls. But these two, the man over the eastern region and the man over the western region, were called consuls. I just want to make that correction because I'm pretty sure it's on tape. So we're corrected on tape, right? Now, we get into chapter 10, and if you just read it the way this particular translation has it, it sounds like it's running right with chapter 9, because it says, in the time of Cyrus, I'm ahead of myself. The 11th chapter is the one that sounds like it's running with the 10th, and I want to make some distinction there. Let's just read the 10th chapter. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a message was revealed to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar. The message was true, but the appointed time was long, and he understood the message and had understanding of the vision. Interesting. He understood the message. He understood the vision. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant food, no meat or wine came into my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. Now, I want to show you something here, may I? Just to get totally off track, all right? People use Daniel, and they go back to the very first chapter of Daniel, and they teach that you're supposed to be vegetarians. But here, he said, I ate no pleasant food, no meat or wine came in my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. So for all of you that think that Daniel lived his life as a vegetarian, that will refute that, okay? This little side thought I thought I'd throw in there. Now on the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold of Uphaz. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, and the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. Now, if you go over to the Revelation, the first chapter, it sounds like Jesus, doesn't it? And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men who were with me did not see the vision. But a great terror fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. In other words, they didn't see the vision, but they had a tremendous awareness of the presence, right? Therefore, I was left alone when I saw this great vision, and no strength remained in me, for my vigor was turned to frailty in me, and I retained no strength. Yet I heard the sound of his words. And while I heard the sound of his words, I was in a deep sleep on my face, with my face to the ground. Suddenly a hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands. And he said to me, listen to this, O Daniel, man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. While he was speaking this word to me, I stood trembling. Then he said to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard. Now, there's several messages that you can preach from this, okay? And we'll try to refrain from all this and stay with our fundamental teaching. How's that? And I have come because of your words. Now look at this. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. Who is reigning at this particular time? Tells you in the first verse. In the first year of Cyrus, or pardon me, third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. He said, the prince of Persia. Cyrus was not withstanding this angelic being. You understand, this spiritual being was not withstood by Cyrus, but by the prince over that, the spirit over that kingdom. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, and behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia. Now I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days. For the vision refers to many days yet to come. When he had spoken such words to me, I turned my face toward the ground and became speechless. And suddenly, one having the likeness of the sons of men touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke, saying to him who stood before me, my Lord, because of the vision, my sorrows have overwhelmed me, and I have retained no strength. For how can this servant of my Lord talk with you, my Lord? As for me, no strength remains in me now, nor is any breath left in me. Then again, the one having the likeness of a man touched me and strengthened me. And he said, O man greatly beloved, fear not, peace be to you. Be strong, yes, be strong. So when he spoke to me, I was strengthened. Isn't that interesting? And said, let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. And then he said, do you know why I have come to you? And now I must return to fight with the prince of Persia. And when I have gone forth, indeed the prince of Greece will come. You see this? In other words, he's telling him the empire is getting ready to change from a Persian empire to a Grecian empire. Now, you understand Daniel's already seen the Babylonian empire overthrown. All ties in to this, right? Fits right in. The head's the Babylonian, the chest and arms were the Medes and Persians. And now, what's the next one that's to come? The belly and thighs? The Grecian Empire. All right, let's keep reading. But I will tell you what is noted in the Scripture of truth. No one upholds me against these except Michael, your prince. You think about that. There's evidently some heavy battling of whatever way it goes on in the spirit world taking place. And the one that's speaking to Daniel says, I stood alone, but then Michael came and helped me out. I was coming to talk to you, but I got detained there for 21 days. I was dispatched day one. And now when I leave, I'm going to have to go back and fight with this prince of Persia, but the prince of Greece is coming. In other words, it's not a question of whether I'm going to win. It's not I'm just going to fight, but I'm going to defeat. Do you see that? Now we go into the 11th chapter, and I got ahead of myself a while ago. He says, also in the first year of Darius the Mede, I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. Now, whether he's giving his narrative together, that's one thing, but the events are not at the same time because one is during the reign of Cyrus and the other is during the reign of Darius. You see that? The first year of Darius the Mede. I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. And now I tell you the truth. Behold, three more. Well, this is the same. I don't know why they divided the chapter. Because it's right in the middle of the context. In other words, he's telling Daniel, I'm going to fight. They're going to be, the Grecian Empire's coming in. And he says also, not only has it been with Cyrus the Persian, also in the first year of Darius the Mede, I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. I'm the one that helped him. I'm the one that overthrew the Babylonian Empire. And now I will tell you the truth. Behold, three more kings will arise in Persia. Now, isn't it interesting that he says he's going to fight, but yet it's not going to be an overnight deal. He said three more kings are going to rise. And the fourth shall be far richer than them all. By his strength through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Greece. Then a mighty king shall arise, who shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. Who do you think he's talking about? This is a king of Greece. So who would that be? It would be Alexander the Great, all right? And when he has arisen, his kingdom shall be broken up and divided toward the four winds of heaven, but not among his posterity, nor according to his dominion with which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be uprooted even for others beside these. Now I want you to look at this image Nebuchadnezzar dreamed up. The Grecian Empire was which part? And thighs of brass. Belly representing Alexander the Great, and then the kingdom after his death is scattered. You see that? Also, the king of the south shall become strong as well as one of his princes, and he shall gain power over him and have dominion. His dominion shall be a great dominion. At the end of some years, they shall join forces, for the daughter of the king of the south shall go to the king of the north to make an agreement, but she shall not retain the power of her authority, and neither he nor his authority shall stand. But she shall be given up with those who brought her, and with him who begot her, and with him who strengthened her, in those days, in those times. But from a branch of her roots one shall arise in his place, who shall come with an army, enter the fortress of the king of the north, and deal with them and prevail. Now, according to history, this was Antiochus II that did this. And he shall also carry their gods captive to Egypt with their princes and their precious articles of silver and gold. And he shall continue more years than the king of the north. Also, the king of the north. Now, remember, this Grecian kingdom's divided. And Antiochus is in the Grecian, all right? He's of the Seleucids, remember? Okay? But there are other dynasties there. Also, the king of the north shall come to the kingdom of the king of the south, but shall return to his own land. However, his sons shall stir up strife and assemble a multitude of great forces. And one shall certainly come and overwhelm and pass through. Then he shall return to his fortress and stir up strife. And the king of the south shall be moved with rage and go out and fight with him, with the king of the north, who shall muster a great multitude, but the multitude shall be given into the hand of his enemy. When he has taken away the multitude, his heart will be lifted up, and he will cast down tens of thousands, but he will not prevail. For the king of the north will return and muster a greater multitude than the former, and shall certainly come at the end of some years with a great army and much equipment. Now in those times, many shall rise up against the king of the south. Also, violent men of your people shall exalt themselves in fulfillment of the vision, but they shall fall. So the king of the north shall come and build a siege, ma'am, and take a fortified city, and the forces of the south shall not withstand him. Even his choice troops shall have no strength to resist. But he who comes against him shall do according to his own will. No one shall stand against him. He shall stand in the glorious land with destruction in his power. This is talking about Israel, isn't it? The glorious land I'm referring to would be Jerusalem. He shall also set his face to enter with the strength of his whole kingdom and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do. And he shall give him the daughter of women to destroy it. But she shall not stand with him or before him. After this, he shall turn his face to the coastlands and shall take many. But a ruler shall bring reproach against them to an end. And with the reproach removed, he shall turn back on him. Then he shall turn his face toward the fortress of his own land, but he shall stumble and fall and not be found. That's Antiochus II that's being spoken of here. Okay, there shall arise in his place one who imposes taxes on the glorious kingdom. But within a few days he shall be destroyed, but not in anger or in battle. That's Antiochus III, according to history. And in his place shall arise a vile person, to whom they will not give the honor of royalty, but he shall come in peaceably and seize the kingdom by intrigue. This is Antiochus IV, better known as Antiochus Epiphanes. With force of a flood they shall be swept away from before him and be broken, and also the prince of the covenant. And after the league is made with him, he shall act deceitfully, for he shall come up and become strong with a small number of people. Now, it's interesting that if you read the history of this, it tells you this is exactly how they came up. All right? He shall enter peaceably, even into the richest places of the province, and he shall do what his fathers have not done, nor his forefathers. He shall disperse among them the plunder, the spoil, and riches. And he shall devise his plans against the strongholds, but only for a time. He shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army. And the king of the south shall be stirred up to battle with a very great and mighty army. But he shall not stand, for they shall devise plans against him. Yes, those who eat of the portion of his delicacies shall destroy him. His army shall be swept away, and many shall fall down slain. But these kings' hearts shall be bent on evil. And they shall speak lies at the same table, but it shall not prosper. For the end will still be at the appointed time. While returning to his land with great riches, his heart shall be moved against the Holy Covenant. This is talking about Antiochus Epiphanes now. So he shall do damage and return to his own land. At the appointed time, he shall return and go toward the south, but it shall not be like the former or the latter. For ships from Cyprus shall come against him. Therefore he shall be grieved and return in rage against the Holy Covenant and do damage. So he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the Holy Covenant. Now history says this is exactly what happened. The Cyrus ships came out and defeated his plan. And forces shall be mustered by him, and they shall defile the sanctuary fortress. Then they shall take away the daily sacrifices and place there the abomination of desolation. Now, we mentioned, I think, in the last session how Antiochus IV or Antiochus Epiphanes did exactly that. He was enraged when these ships from Cyrus defeated his purpose. Then he takes his anger out. He goes against the Jews. He actually goes into the temple. He offers the pig on the altar and wrecks an idol, I think it's of Zeus, in the above the altar there. So he desecrates the temple. This is history. This is documented, you understand. It's already been done. Those who do wickedly against the covenant, he shall corrupt with flattery. But the people who know their God shall be strong and carry out great exploits. Now, I don't know how you feel about the Apocrypha, which some people call the missing books of the Bible or whatever. I believe that I don't believe they're missing. I believe the Bible, the canon as we know it, is exactly as God wanted it. But there's a lot of things that can be gleaned from the Apocrypha if you ever read any of the books. And where he's talking about the people who know their God shall rise up and do great exploits. The Maccabees were Antiochus Epiphanes' greatest nightmare. And they stood up, and this is documented history. It's in, I think it's what, four books of the Maccabees? Maccabees 1, 2, 3, and 4. And but anyway, it's very interesting to read it. It's history of what the Maccabeans accomplished for the nation of Israel. It's bringing the honor and the glory to men, and I believe that's why it's not in the canon. But they're standing up for their God, and they take small numbers and do great things with small numbers, okay? And I believe that that's what this is referring to here. And those of the people who understand shall instruct many, Judas Maccabees being the most renowned of the Maccabees. Excuse me. Yet for many days they shall fall by the sword and flame, by captivity and plundering. Now when they fall, they shall be aided with little help. With a little help. But many shall join with them by intrigue. And some of those understanding shall fall to refine them, purify them, and make them white until the time of the end, because it's still for the appointed time. In other words, they'll succumb to the persecution. That sort of lines up with Timothy, Paul's writing to Timothy in the latter days. Some shall depart from faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. You see the parallel there. Verse 36. The king that Antiochus was fighting against, ships of Cyrus that came out and turned him away, they're the ones that forced him to leave Egypt. And when he left Egypt, he left in a rage and began his attack against the Jews. All right? I'll just tell you this. I can't remember if I told you this before, but there were 13 members of the Seleucid dynasty. Antiochus Epiphanes may be the most renowned, and they followed the rule of Alexander the Great after his death, and the kingdom split, and different ones tried to get power. But the Seleucids were probably the most renowned. Verse 36, then the king shall do according to his own will. He shall exalt and magnify himself above every god, shall speak blasphemies against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the wrath has been accomplished. For what has been determined shall be done. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any god, for he shall exalt himself above them all. Now I've heard this taught that he's a homosexual. But if you look at the Jewish history of this thing, what was the desire of Jewish women? To be the mother of the Messiah. And I'm convinced in my own heart that that's what he's referring to, what's being referred to here. He shall regard neither the God of his fathers nor the Messiah. He doesn't regard any God. He's acting like he is God. For he shall exalt himself above them all. But in their place he shall honor a God of fortresses and a God which his fathers did not know. He shall honor with gold and silver, with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus he shall act against the strongest fortresses with a foreign god, which he shall acknowledge, and advance its glory. And he shall cause them to rule over many and divide the land for gain. At the time of the end of the king of the south shall attack him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind with chariots, horsemen, and with many ships. And he shall enter the countries, overwhelm them, and pass through. He shall also enter the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. And these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon. He shall stretch out his hand against the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over treasures of gold and silver, and over the precious things of Egypt. Also the Libyans and Ethiopians shall fall at his heels. But news from the east and the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go out with great fury to destroy and annihilate many. He shall plant the tents of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one will help him. Antiochus Epiphanes, according to history, died of an incurable bowel disease. That's what stopped him. Men didn't. God did. This is a divine intervention there. Now we get into chapter 12. It says, at that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that time. Now here it seems to me like this thing has changed from what has already taken place, from what is going to take place, just following the context. And at that time your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book, and many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. Some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament. Those who turn many to righteousness, like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase. Do you think that's happening? Oh, definitely. Never in the history of mankind has travel been as easy and as fast as it is today. And there's more knowledge than you can keep up with. It changes on a daily basis. I saw in the news where they just changed the dictionary again, trying to keep up with the times. You think about it, all the computer terminology that has to be added. Then I, Daniel, looked, and there stood two others, one on this riverbank and the other on that riverbank. And one said to the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, how long shall the fulfillment of these wonders be? Then I heard the man clothed in linen who was above the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand, his left hand to heaven, and swore to him who lives forever, that it shall be for a time, times, and half a time. And when the power of the holy people has become completely shattered, all things shall be finished. Although I heard, I did not understand. Now see, before he understood the vision, now he doesn't understand what's going on here. But then I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. That just tells me that everything God doesn't reveal to us. As a matter of fact, the scriptures say the secret things belong to God, right? Many shall be purified, many shall be purified, made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away, and the abomination of desolation is set up, there shall be 1,290 days, 1,290 days. Blessed is he who waits and comes to the 1,335 days, 1,335 days. But you, go your way till the end, for you shall rest and will arise to your inheritance at the end of the days. Now, I'd like to tell you that I knew what that meant with the 1290 and the 1,335. I've read some interesting material on it, and some of them equate that to a prophetic year. I don't know how they come up with some of the stuff they come up with. I'm gonna tell you, like Daniel was, I don't know what it means. And the Lord told him, don't concern yourself with it. And if the Lord wants us to know, then I believe that He'll open it up when it's time, you understand. I don't think we have to speculate. I believe when it's time, the Spirit of God reveals things, and then you don't have to make it fit the Scriptures. The Scriptures come alive and prove and interpret. Scripture interprets Scripture. You understand? Now, some comments I want to make to you, but I don't think I want to make them on tape. Okay? So I just ask you to just stop the tape of this session, and that I can't, if anybody listens to the tape and they don't talk to me face to face, then I'm hung out to dry. Okay?